Again, thank you for the invitation, and thank you for your part in our ministry in the 100-plus souls that you've impacted for Christ. I would like for you to turn to John chapter 9 tonight, and you have to pay close attention, because English is not my native language. The TH is the hardest thing for a German to say. It does not exist in the German language. And I probably told you many years ago that after I had... See, I came to the United States in 1984 to go to Bible school. And sometime during those years, between 84 and 89, I went to the dentist in Germany. And he said, "Your front teeth are loose." And he said he couldn't figure out what the problem was. And I said, "I know what the problem is. Because when you have to make the TH sound, what do? You take your tongue." Yeah, see, you have to think about that because it's natural to you. But see, this is the stuff we have to learn. You take your tongue, you press it against your front teeth. All right? And so if you try real hard, eventually your teeth get loose. And that's what happened. They did stay. I didn't lose them. I kind of took it a little easier on the TH after that. In John chapter 9, we read in verses 1 and 2. "And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, 'Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?'" I think we have a lot of misconceptions about God when we think about God. I think we have a lot of misconceptions about the work God does in us and in this world. And even in the two verses, we already see two misconceptions if we look closer. What do we know about God, who God is and how He is? What do we know about Him? Where do we know it from? Well, if you want to look with me a few chapters later in John chapter 14, one of the disciples of Jesus kind of asked Him that question, "Show us the Father, let us see the Father. We would like to see God." And then Jesus says to Philip, who asked that question, and says in verse 9, he says to him, Jesus saith unto him, "Have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, show us the Father?" So how do we know about the Father? We know about the Father when we look at the Son. If you want to know how the Father is, you have to see the Son. This is the only way to really know Him. At the beginning of John, John writes in chapter 1, in verse 17 and 18, he says, John chapter 1, verse 17 and 18, in chapter 1, verse 17, "For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, He hath declared Him." So, no one has ever seen the Father. The only one that has seen the Father is the Son. And the Son's job was to declare the Son or to explain the Father. So Jesus, when we look Jesus into the eyes, when we look at Jesus, we see the Father. When we listen to Jesus, He explains what God is like. And it states here in verse 17, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. In verse 14, this principle is restated, or actually stated the first time in verse 14, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld His glory, the glory of the Father, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So if we look at Jesus, if we want to know what God the Father is like, then we see Jesus, and it says Jesus was what? Full of grace and truth. But He was full of both. Not more grace and not more truth. But He was filled to the top with both grace and truth. Some people want to only hear about the grace of God. And some people only want to hear about the truth of God. But Jesus declares us the Father as full of grace and truth. And so as we continue in John chapter 9, we need to keep this in mind. We need to bear in mind that the Father, that the Son acts like the Father. And He is full of grace and truth. So the first misconception is that Jesus passed by. That was not accidental. That was on purpose. Jesus is interested in individuals, and that is the message tonight, being interested in individuals. We heard about the prayer letter from Mexico, about the 5 million that they were able to reach through the radio station, and how they reached 7 million more tonight, and that is wonderful, and I wish we could do this in Germany. But in Germany, the frequencies are bought up pretty much by the government and do not allow any Christian stations to air. There is no Christian stations in Germany at all because of this problem. So that is a wonderful blessing in Mexico. So we deal with one-on-one with individuals, and it takes a long time. I have two pastor friends. They're twins. They went to Bible school with me. One of the twins is a missionary in Belgium, in Europe. His twin brother is a missionary in Africa. The brother in Belgium has started one church in 35 years, or in 30 years. His brother, who is a missionary in Africa, has started 35 churches in the same amount of time. Europe, in general, is a very difficult place to reach people for Jesus Christ. But I want to thank you for participating in that, and your patience, and your love that you send us by your help financially and in prayers. And then the second misconception is in verse 2. Not only did Jesus he did not pass by on accident, on purpose He passed by. And His disciples, verse 2, asked Him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? There's the next misconception. Somebody thought, if somebody was born blind, it is the fault of someone. In this case, it must have been the person itself or the parents. Do you ever feel like that everything unfortunate that happens to you is your fault? Do you believe that God punishes you every time that you do something wrong? I'll be honest with you. If I believe that God punishes me every time I do something wrong, I don't think I'd be standing here. I'd be walking around screaming all the time. And if we were honest, we would. I think God has a lot of patience and a lot of grace. He's full of grace, yet He's full of truth. He doesn't sweep the truth under the carpet for the sake of grace. Do you know who asked that question? Who thought up this principle of God is punishing or sin is causing this? Who thought this up? Look in verse 2. His disciples. The disciples thought that. Those who had been with Jesus for some time, they were still in that thinking. Every time something bad happens, it must be because of the fault of someone. Maybe it is the punishment. And then Jesus answers that question and says in verse 3, Jesus answered, neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. Neither. Sometimes we think it's because of this or that. God is this way or God is that way. That is our thinking. That was the disciples' thinking. And you know what Jesus said? Neither. It's not this way or that way. It is so that God might be glorified. So sometimes God will use pain and will use unfortunate circumstances to manifest Himself in our lives and to glorify Himself. And so Jesus did something very unusual. He healed the man, but in an unusual way. We know the story. Jesus spit on the ground and He stirred up some mud, and then He put it on the guy's, the blind man's eyes. Plutch, plutch. It's very unusual, I'm sure. I'm sure it's unusual. It's unusual in Germany to do that. I'm sure it's unusual to do that here. I bet you it was unusual in that day. I don't know what the purpose was, but He did it. And then He told the guy, go to the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent, and gives it a new meaning to that pool. Go wash yourself. And the man washed himself. I don't know who led him to the pool of Siloam. Now he was double blind. First he didn't see, then he has mud on his eyes. I'm sure somebody must have taken him there. And he washed himself. And then he came back seeing. And then Jesus was gone. And so he goes home. And the first people that he encounters are the neighbors, his neighbors. And if you want to read on in verse 8, when the neighbors see him, they say, we're not sure if this is the guy. The neighbors, therefore, and they which before had seen him, that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? They were not sure. Well, what's the problem? You've seen him, I don't know how many years. Now he sees and you don't even recognize him. You know, I believe that when a person gets in contact with Jesus, he changes. It's the same person, but your neighbors will not even recognize you, perhaps. When Jesus has touched you, there is a change. And so much for the judgment of your neighbors. Don't listen to your neighbors. When my dad got saved, the neighbors got really upset. Especially when he got baptized. Because by baptism, we show publicly, I'm following Jesus Christ now. And I denounce my former religion. And the neighbor said to my father, if your father, that is my grandfather, would see this, he would turn over in his grave. And the reason why they said it, because my grandfather was a great leader in the Lutheran church. He was the conductor of a Christian brass band. And when the Nazis in 1938-37 wanted to march through our town, they asked my grandfather to play with his Christian brass band, and my grandfather refused. It's a long story, but they arrested him eventually, put him in a kind of concentration camp, and let you read that story. We put a webpage up, we'll publish that story. And he was sent as a punishment to the Russian front and was killed there shortly thereafter. That's why they said, that's why our neighbor said, your father would turn over in his grave. Well, my dad says he got letters from his dad from the Russian front. And one of the last letters he got, the tune had totally changed. My dad thinks somebody may have showed him how to be saved. And so one day when I get to heaven, and when my dad gets to heaven, guess who we're looking out for? We want to see if he's truly saved. I would love to see him in heaven. So the neighbors, by the way, somebody asked me, what is the greatest accomplishment in your ministry so far? And I have to think back, you know, this happened and that happened, but really the greatest accomplishment, it comes probably to my neighbors where we live. We live on a street of about 40 houses, maybe 50 houses. Out of the 50 homes, or out of all the homes on our street, 20% of the homes have visited our church. And some of them have stayed for 3 years in our church. Out of those 20% of our neighbors that came to church, 6 people got saved, 4 adults and 2 teenagers. Only 1 has been baptized so far. Because of the cost of discipleship, it is a great cost in Germany. Many people do not want to take it. 3% of our town have been in our church, and 1% of our greater area has visited our church. I am now the oldest pastor in ministry in our town. We have become quite an entity and made an impact to where the Lutherans, the Catholics, and the Methodists are starting to recognize that our attendance is better than theirs. And it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle. I think we've wanted to quit many times, but by God's grace, this church will continue and make an even greater impact in the future. Please pray for that. Then, after the neighbors, the blind man was brought to the Pharisees in verse 13, because the Pharisees were the ones that had to give an official certificate for healing. You know, there's a lot of phonies out there, even in that time. So they were so unsure if this was truly the blind man that the Pharisees were called up and say, give us an official certificate that this has really, truly happened. The problem was when Jesus healed the man, it was the wrong day of the week. It was the Sabbath day, and they took offense at that. As a matter of fact, they said in verse 18, therefore said some of the Pharisees, verse 16, this man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, how can such a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. Oh, this guy cannot be of God, because he healed on the Sabbath. See, they had God figured out without Jesus, who's the only one that has ever seen the Father. They carried God around in their little box. And they figured out that God would not do such a thing on the Sabbath, because the law is more important than a changed life. Tradition is more important than new life. It is better to leave someone blind than to heal someone on the Sabbath. I think the disciples had God in their box too. Who has sinned? You know, they said, who has sinned, this man or his parents? Well, wait a minute, he was born blind. Are you trying to say he sinned before he was born? Well, what sin did he do before he was born? See, that's that narrow thinking. When religion and tradition take over, we have no clear... The blind men were really the ones that were seeing. The religious ones. Those were the blind ones, and Jesus points that out at the end of this chapter. That's his conclusion to this whole chapter. So the Pharisees had already made up their mind. They called the parents up, and the parents, they said, well, yeah, of course this is our son, but we're not going to testify for our son, because why didn't even the parents testify for the son? Read in verse 22. It said, these words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. They had already made up their minds. They had already agreed that whoever follows Jesus, whoever associates with Jesus, you know what? We don't want to hear the facts. We are just going to put you out of the synagogue if you associate with Jesus. That's what religious people do. They don't want to listen to anything. They've already made up their mind. This is God in their box, and God can only be this way and no other way. And usually when we do that, we're wrong anyway. You know? Unless we have really looked into Jesus to see how he is, full of grace, full of truth. Yeah. Oh, he doesn't throw truth away. Don't ever throw the truth away for the sake of grace. But be full of both. Is this the reason why Jesus can go to a Levi, a publican, and say, follow me? That's why he can go to the home of a Zacchaeus, a despised publican, the lowest sinner there is, and say, I must go into your house today. The Pharisees say in verse 24, this is what the Pharisees know about God. This is what they know about Jesus. Then again called they the man that was blind and said unto him, now they ask the blind man, or say to him, give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner. So here's the theologians, here's the Pharisees. We know that this man is a sinner. Well, how do you know that? Did you ever see him sin? No. We know it. It can't be any other way. He healed on the Sabbath. They did not understand God. They had no clue about God. God is all about mercy. And he will heal on the Sabbath. The law is not more important than grace. Jesus is full of grace and truth. Not just Sabbath truth, but full of grace and truth. We know that this man is a sinner, and we know something else. In John chapter 9 and verse 29, they know something else. Look at this. We know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. Of course you don't know from whence he is, because you don't know the Father. You don't know God. That's why you don't know Jesus. Now the interesting thing is, one of his colleagues, the head Pharisee of the time, he came to a totally different conclusion. He didn't say, we know that this is a sinner, and we know not from whence he is. If you go back with me to the third chapter of John, we'll come right back to chapter 9. Look at what another Pharisee, the head of the Pharisees, says, what his conclusion is. Nicodemus, you know him. Verse 2. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, not sinner, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God. No man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. That's interesting. He comes to a totally different conclusion and says, we know that you come from God. And the others, we know that this man is a sinner. We do not know where he comes from. Well, what's wrong? That is the predetermined religious view. It just closed down because we already know everything. And we're so comfortable with our little God in the box. And we carry him around. You know, and usually when we go on vacation, we'll just put him down somewhere and go on. God, stay here for the vacation. This is a better place than where I'm going. Some people do that, unfortunately. I'm not saying that you are doing that. Let's look at the blind man briefly again. Let's look at his testimony. What do you think is who Jesus is? Who, the one who put mud on your eyes and you washed and you came back seeing. What do you think about all of this? Your parents didn't take up for you. We think he's a sinner. The neighbors don't have a clue what's going on. What do you say? Well, earlier he said, where did he say that? He's a prophet. And that was already in verse 17. He came to the conclusion he must be a prophet. That's verse 17. Then they ask him again, and that goes back to verse 25. Here's his testimony. He said already he's a prophet in verse 17. Now he says, he answered and said, whether he be a sinner or not, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. I don't know much about God, and I don't know much about this Jesus, but one thing I know, I was blind, and now I see, and I know that, because I can see now, and you can see it too, can't you? You see. How much do I have to know about God to believe about him? Not much. I don't have to know everything about God before I can believe anything about God. You have to come into contact with Jesus weak as a sinner, and he has to save you by his grace, because he is full of grace and he's full of truth. Now the blind man makes a statement that this chapter is full of bad theology. That's just the way people, what people think about God. It's full of bad theology. Even the blind man, I mean, he was not a theologian. He says, for example, in verse 31, the blind man says, "Now we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshipper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth." Well, if you are a straight Christian, then God will hear you. But if you sin, oh, then he'll punish you and he'll not listen to you. Didn't we already start with that whole scenario that way? Now we know that God heareth not sinners. Now, you think about that statement for a minute. So you feel guilty right now, right? Because you've sinned. And you know God's not going to answer your prayers. And to a degree, that's true. But is that true all the time? Now think about it. Romans 10:13. You probably know that by heart. "For whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be saved." Did we say whosoever, or did we say the good Christians? "For whosoever." Now let's look at the story that Jesus told. He told of a publican and another religious man who went to the temple to pray. And the religious man said, I'm not like this publican over there. I am a good man. I fast twice a week. And I give tithe of everything I have. I'm a good Baptist. We would almost say, don't we? And then the publican comes into the temple. He doesn't even want to lift up his eyes to heaven. He just bows down and he smites on his chest and says, "God, be merciful unto me, a sinner." And what did Jesus say after that? Who went down justified? The sinner. Because he acknowledged his sin. God does not hear sinners. That's not quite true. He does. Now, we are not supposed to sin. We know that. The first book of John tells us that. Then, through all of this, there's a few funny things in that story. I don't have time for all that. Verse 34. This is the conclusion of this whole scenario. "They answered and said unto him, Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? And they cast him out." They cast him out. That means they excommunicated him out of the synagogue. And to be excommunicated out of the synagogue meant you could not even worship in the temple, and you were cast out of the social life. You had nothing. And so here's a blind man who receives his sight. He comes in contact with Jesus. In the end, everybody else is upset with him that he's healed, and they throw him out. And that's sometimes the experience Christians or new converts have. They come into contact with Jesus, and things get worse. Have you ever experienced that too? Things just don't go much better. So it gets worse, and then there you are, all alone. And then comes the next verse, and that verse gives me the goosebumps. It brings a tear to my eyes. Read verse 35 with me. That's the main core of tonight's message. "Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, Dost thou believe on the Son of God?" Sometimes we feel like, does God even know my name? Is God interested in me? Does he know my situation? When Jesus had heard, Jesus does listen. He listens to the prayers. He listens to the cares of the people. And when Jesus had heard him, what did Jesus do when he had heard what they did to him? Jesus came and he started looking for him. Where is he? Where is he that I healed? What did they do with him? And Jesus kept going and looking, and he found him, it says. Jesus didn't pass by accident. He knew all along what was going to happen. So Jesus comes looking for him, and he found him. And Jesus is interested in individuals, and that's what keeps me going in Germany. I don't see these great mass conversions. I have to go look for them one by one. And it is like, you know, the woman that was with the issue of blood was in that big crowd that everybody crowded around Jesus. And all of a sudden Jesus said, well, somebody touched me just now. And the disciples said, well, everybody is touching you. What are you talking about? Jesus said, somebody touched me in a different way. And it was that woman. He touched him by faith. She touched him by faith. It is like that lost sheep. That one lost sheep and the 99 are in the stall, whatever you call it. He's going out to look for that one sheep. It's like that one lost coin. You got all the other ones, but you're going to look for that one lost coin because it's important to you. Because you're full of care. And it is like that one lost son. Well, you don't necessarily always go looking for him. Sometimes you have to wait till he decides to come back. But Jesus is interested in individuals. In each individual life, in each person. Jesus came to seek and to save that which is lost. That's what he did. And so he asked them in the end, dost thou believe on the Son of God? I came to heal you, but do you really believe? Now he was physically healed, now he needed to be healed spiritually. Do you believe on the Son of God? That is your decision. I came by, not by accident. I came to seek. And I came to seek you again. Now it is up to you to believe. I understand the sovereignty of God. But I have a responsibility to respond to God's sovereignty. Because in Romans 10:9, it says the following. And I would like to close with that. Romans 10:9. If you believe, well, it starts out differently. That if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus and shalt believe in thine heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. See, there's a responsibility I have. I know that God generates faith in me and that the Holy Spirit convicts me and that He draws me to Him. But through all of this, He's still giving me a responsibility. If you believe in your heart, and that is what I must respond to. Paul says, be you reconciled. That is the responsibility. Each and every one has the responsibility to respond to God in faith and to receive Jesus Christ. But as many as received Him, to them gave He the power to become the sons of God. And that is my responsibility. I can decide in my heart tonight what I do with Jesus and how I respond to Him. I can decide in my heart tonight if I will fall down before Him and worship Him. And I can decide whether I will follow Him. I will become a disciple. We have too many Christians and too few disciples, too few followers of Jesus. Everyone's a Christian. I think half of Dallas are Christians. Two-thirds of Germans are Christians because two-thirds of Germans belong to a church. Do you know only 1% claim to be born again of Christians in Germany? They have a new phrase, a new term, believing Christians, as to unbelieving Christians. That's a contradiction in itself. You cannot be a believing Christian. Either you are one or you're not. Either you are born again or you're not born again. But you can make up your mind whether you become a follower of Jesus or not. A disciple. And you can make up your mind what you will do with that. Thank you so much for deciding to give to missions. For making an impact on lives all over the world. Thank you for making an impact through your help in our town. in the Filipino ministry, in the Hungarian ministry, and perhaps in the future, and we hope we can do it. I'm just praying God will do it quickly. I'm getting older. In the rural area, where there's so many people that need to be saved. Would you please stand with me tonight? I don't know how God touched you tonight, but whatever He did, let Him do His work in you.